Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Good afternoon, Paul, on this fine Wednesday afternoon. What's up with you?
Well, we're living in alternative realities. You said fine Wednesday afternoon, and it's cloudy and cold. I'm suicidal outside here. It's not sunny Southern California.
It's not cloudy. It is sunny.
Oh, my goodness.
I can see the sky.
Oh, there's clouds, and it's overcast, and you're coming in chipper and cheery here today.
Hirsch, listen to this. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, I am.
A guy from Southern California complaining that it's cloudy?
I move to paradise for it to be perfect. When it's not perfect, I'm upset.
I just want to say that any conversation about cloudy and cold, you've lost somebody from Seattle.
You're like, yeah, that's every day.
Or you're identifying with them.
No, I'm just saying, no, those are our best days.
We had somebody on from Illinois today on another show. And they said, how is it today? They said, oh, it's beautiful today. It's 50. And I thought, 50? I'd be freezing at 50 here. I'm complaining because it's 50 here.
50's heaven.
I went on a walk last night with a family from Virginia, and I had a really thick black coat on. I was thinking I need a sweater. And he's from Virginia, where it's been, in the day, it's been 27.
Yeah, right.
And he was just in a T-shirt and said, this is just beautiful. You know? And I'm thinking in a T-shirt and shorts, and I'm in long pants and a heavy jacket and a sweater. I'll take my spoiled life. Well, let's get on with the show. Today we've got, as you figured out probably already, we have our good friend Terry Hirschy. And Terry and I have a bold subject today. It's called Instructions for Living. Now, don't worry, we're using the instructions from another offer because instructions from Terry and me, let's just say let's take Mary Oliver's instructions, who we're going to talk about today. For those of you that are not familiar with Terry, he is Terry Hirschy is the author of 17 books with a new one coming out in fall, sought-after public speaker. I just heard him speak to a few thousand people last week, and an award-winning landscape architect of English country gardens that are just outstanding. Now, as some or many of you may know, in January of this year, one of America's greatest contemporary poets, Mary Oliver, died. And Terry and I plan to chat a bit about a line from one of her poems called Sometimes, and it's from her latest collection titled Redbird. The line from the poem that we are going to talk about is this: Instructions for living a life. Pay attention, be astonished, and tell someone about it. And so we are going to take those three, and let's bring on Hirsch and chat about paying attention, being astonished, and talking about it. So Hirsch, what's up, man?
Ready. How are you? I spent much of the day in the garden, and it was in the high 50s, 58, but it was perfect.
Yeah, that's warm this time of year for you, right?
Oh, it's just perfect. Yeah. No, well, yeah.
Yeah. Are the newbies growing out?
Yeah. All of our daffodils are blooming, and the tulips are up, and they'll be blooming in a week or so, and all the plants are growing, and
I still can't believe as many years as you've lived there. Well, how long have you lived at this particular house?
I built it 16 years ago.
16 years, and I've been to the house only in the winter. I have never seen your garden bloom.
Oh, you've never come in the summer?
No, I've never seen your garden bloom. I've seen another house that you had, the first house you had. I saw that blooming, but I didn't see this one.
Wow.
So last week you spoke with several thousand people, and you did a speech on Mary Oliver's Instructions for Living a Life. And I want to know, what provoked you to talk on this particular subject?
Well, I've always been a fan of the premise. that, the work I do, as you know, is basically about paradigm shift. We need to change the kind of questions we ask. Otherwise, I'll give you an illustration. So here's one of my favorite quotes, David Orr. He said, the world doesn't need more successful people. The world doesn't need more successful people, but it could desperately use more peacemakers, healers, restorers, and lovers of every kind.
I love that.
And to the point is every day, and you know what this is like, every day I get emails, professional kind of emails that are trying to pitch me. And the whole pitch is how much more, quote, successful I could be.
Yeah.
And it's all an angle.
It is. It is.
It's all about being richer, selling more books, having a bigger audience. In other words, it's just no one ever says to me, hey, Terry, I've got an idea for you to live a fuller life. Why don't you pay attention and be astonished?
You know, we talked 2 weeks ago with a friend that I'm not sure you know, Sanford Coggins, and we talked about what I call the disappearing value of honor, and that how important mm-hmm. it is to live an honorable life. And if you were to die, having people said you were an honorable man or woman would be quite a thing to say. And I made note that, as you're really aware, that self-help books pre-20th century were all about character, were mm-hmm. all about the depths of your character, and ever how you want to take a look at it. And it goes from Thoreau, Emerson, Nietzsche, to Seneca, to Aristotle. And then Napoleon Hill came along and wrote several books, including Think and Grow Rich. And all of a sudden, self-help books moved from character to success. And that seems to be what's happened in our capitalistic
society. Well, a particular kind of success, though, too. A particular kind of success.
Yes, finance and fame.
Correct. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Used to have that conversation way back in the day, remember?
Yeah.
Would you rather be a millionaire or have notoriety?
Yeah.
And I was the one that said I wanted a big audience, and you said, no, I'm comfortable with a big pocketbook.
Yeah, big pocketbook and nobody knowing me.
Exactly. And both of us were not wrong, but both of us didn't have a bigger picture yet.
No, not at all. You know, it's unfortunate that genuine wisdom is reserved for the old. There are plenty of young, wise people, but when I say there are plenty, they are very rare. It just takes most of us a lot of years to get there, to take a look back at our life and say, I might have done a few things a little differently, thought about, you know, made a paradigm shift earlier. But let's start with Mary Oliver's. I like these three things: pay attention, be astonished, and she says tell about it. And someone else had written, I read, talk to someone about it. Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to start with paying attention, and I think I'm going to play a bit of a devil's advocate here. This phrase, paying attention, hearkens this new and, to me, overused invitation to be present and to maintain mindfulness, which I consider, as I've really thought about it, Terry, I consider it rather redundant. For what else am I doing if I am not present? If I am where I am, doing what I am doing, what's this presence nonsense about?
So a little boy says to his mama, 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 listen to me, but this time with your eyes.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm here, but am I here? I mean, the same thing we ask each other all the time when we're having conversations. We know very well what it's like with a cell phone on our hand to be here but not here.
You know, I'd written this somewhere else, but I want to bring it up now, and I'm just going to have to, you know, I have it in my notes, but I don't know where it is in my notes. Oh. Tell me about this. It's an issue that I have. In your speeches, you have a story that you love to tell of a woman on a ferry who is watching a tremendous, eye-catching, a beautiful sight of the sun glowing against the snow caps of a mountain, while many others paid no attention to it. And I say that's fine and dandy. But what about people like me, Terry, who love to just sit and think? Sometimes I'm not interested in a great view, no matter how great it is, as much as I'm interested in pondering a new idea or a thought experiment. What does that mean? Does that mean I'm not paying attention?
No, in fact, to the point, you're actually practicing what she's preaching.
How so?
Her attention had to do with a mountain. She was looking at a mountain. That was her attention. In other words, it absorbed her.
Okay.
You're saying that you want to sit and think. That's fine. But does it absorb you? Are you distracted? Do you go elsewhere?
Yeah, I'm repeating myself on podcast. What's new? I said last week to a guy that I could used to when I worked a real job for a decade in my 20s. I would be so deep in thought about some particular subject that I would literally run into a file cabinet, walk into a file cabinet, and not even see it because I was so invested in this thought. And is that too paying attention?
Well, here's the deal is this. I mean, yeah, it's about focus. But if you're going to have I want to live this day fully, which means I want to be present to the day. And so if that means be absorbed in thought, that's fine. But I tell the story, maybe I told it when you were there, about the little first grade class that was asked to name the seven wonders of the world.
Oh, yeah, tell me that again.
Seven wonders of the world, of course. For first graders, that's not necessarily easy, but they're all doing it. You know, the pyramids, Niagara Falls, etc. And they're doing great. And then one little girl says nothing, and so the teacher says, Emily, and Emily says, I don't think I understand the question. She said, why? She said, because I have all the wrong answers. And she said, well, why don't you read what you have? And she said, the seven wonders of the world are to see and to hear and to taste and to touch and to smell, and to love, and to belong.
Yeah, she pretty much nailed it with that.
So the pay attention part is simply, it's to be at home in the moment. Are you at home in the moment?
What do you mean by at home?
That means I don't need to answer the question, is this enough? I don't need to give my grief by saying this is not enough. Which every single email sent to me about my success tells me I don't have enough yet.
Right.
At home means I don't have to fight with the word enough. That doesn't mean I can't get better. That doesn't mean I can't improve in certain areas. But right now, today, this moment is enough. It's okay to say that. And so
I've never heard that word used in talking about paying attention, mindfulness, presence. I've never heard the word even used enough, and it is so relevant are you satisfied with what you have? A big word of my vocabulary has become acceptance.
Let's not use the verb satisfied. Are you content?
Yeah, which is, you know, I happen to use them synonymously, but I use the word content a lot more. That's what I mean. Are you content with that? Yeah. Now, go ahead.
The other story I told was about my friend Tim Hansel, who wrote a book on parenting and says to his boys, how do you know dad loves you? And he figured they'd say, dad, remember when you took us to Disney like for 10 days? And so they didn't say that. So he knew he wasted the money, you know, like we parents do. Because we have these assumptions about what we're supposed to do to be, quote, successful. And he thought they'd say, "Dad, we know you love us when you brought us all those presents." And they said, "Dad, we know you love us when you wrestle with us." So he remembered two times he'd come home. He was hungry, he'd tired, he'd late. He didn't care. And these urchins are jerking on his pants. He said, "So I rolled with them on the floor toward the kitchen just to get them out of my way." And then, see, that's when it hits him in the middle of that. This is the point. In the middle of that ordinary, very boring, very mundane experience, real life was happening. That's where life is, in that wrestling time. And so you shift. Your question is, you know, about am I focused on the right or wrong thing, is no. Does what I'm focused on awaken gratitude in my spirit that I'm glad to be alive? That's what I'm asking.
So you're articulated in ways that I've never heard it articulated. Am I glad that I'm alive? Am I pleased with what I'm seeing? And am I, as we'll get to, am I astonished? I do like, one thing that I found, Terry, really helpful was Mary Oliver's phrase, paying attention. Because I've just so wrestled with presence and mindfulness. There's, you know, those are nouns that I have a hard time putting a definition around. But paying attention is a verbal, it's an action. It tells me something to do. And to pay attention as I'm going along. See, I can think of times, how many times, Terry, have we driven someplace, even a new place, and you know, you drive mindlessly and you still miss so many things.
Yeah, so when I do a, I have people do it when they're not at a retreat, but when I do a retreat, I have an exercise I do, and I have people, it's usually a fairly large facility. So I have people choose a place they're gonna walk to that takes maybe 2 minutes to walk. So that's not terribly far. But I say, you have to walk there as fast as you can, thinking only about where you're going. And then when you get there, you need to take about, you know, 3-5 minutes, just rest and breathe. Now, I want you to walk back the exact same way you came, but I want you to take 15 minutes. And I want you to tell me what you see.
Do they take notes, or do they just, they're remembering?
What's that?
Do anal people like me take notes as we're walking by?
Not only, well, the point is, it's not just taking notes, is that they bring stuff back in, like a leaf or a flower or just something they picked. I mean,
so what is that experience like? Does the audience really get it?
Awesome. Unbelievable. And then they're at a table, and the table's full of all these things they bring back. And I'm careful that they're not picking stuff up that they shouldn't be picking up. But, I mean, it's awesome. Every single person has something they see that they wouldn't have seen if they weren't, and there's it is, paying attention.
So, really, in a sense, you have all three of Mary Oliver's suggestions going on at your table, because they paid attention in acquiring these rocks or flowers or weeds or whatever. They're astonished by them, and then they have an opportunity to tell each other about it?
Well, so I was just working in Connecticut this last week, and I was talking about this subject. And I said, you know, I'm changing these two things, it's chicken and egg. Because the reality is, very often I'm astonished, and then I pay attention. And so it invites me to pay attention. So I don't get hung up on which is first or second, because I agree with you.
Right, right.
All of a sudden I'm like, because my question is, you know, to me, the invitation to spirituality is the question, is the statement, I never noticed that before, which means I'm here. I never noticed that before.
Yeah.
I'm actually here.
I hate to think of the things that I have not noticed before. The parks are building around my house, and I haven't even noticed that they've built parks or new gas stations, and I didn't even know they were starting. I just saw them up, and you know, they had to be months building, and I never even saw it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
So I'm a great paying attention or in awe. But you know, I remember years ago I used to have a weekly meeting and it was perhaps 20, 25-minute drive, and I did it for close to a year, and just as an arrival point, you know, a leaving point and an arrival point. And then one time, one day, I happened to look, as I neared my destination, I happened to look to the right, and there was a junior college that just had, that was old. When I say old in California, you know, I'm talking 30, 40, 50 years old. And it had the most magnificent landscape. Mm-hmm. Just, I mean, it was just, you know, it wasn't filled with flowers. It was plants that were just put together correctly, that really worked well together and kind of let to grow a little wildly, but with a little care. It was magnificent. And so then after that, every time I drove by that, I looked at that garden and just enjoyed that garden. But you know how many months I had to drive to see that garden?
No.
Well, 7, 8, 9, 10 months.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, I just read an article. Are you familiar with a magazine called Ruminate? It's an online magazine. I found this line, and I want to talk about paying attention. Well, this kind of really sums up everything. And here's a quote from this magazine, Ruminate. "We're all about exploring what it means to notice ourselves and our world, to be playfully curious, to say yes to wonder, to slowing down, asking questions, paying attention, and telling stories. I love this, to play playfully curious and saying yes to wonder." We tend to dismiss those, don't we?
100%. There's a great story about a group of psychologists that were doing studies with children about what kind of toys really got their attention. And so these were toy manufacturers who were part of this experiment, you know. What kind of things really did the kids really resonate with? And these are young children. These are, you know, preschool still, right? Ages 2, 3, 4 kind of stuff, 3, 4, 5. And so they had these whole varieties, and you can do the spectrum of kinds of toys they had. And they would bring out, you know, the box with the toy, and they would open it and get the toy because they wanted that excitement, you know, which toy would they, it's like Christmas almost. And after, I don't know what the time element was, but after a period of not that long, there's a group of kids in there. So it's not just the toys, but the kids then create sort of this community. There's a community that the kids have, you know, it's like how to play together or not play together. They have to work it out. And you know what the kids were playing with after about a half hour?
Legos.
The boxes. They were making forts, and in other words, they were
playing make-believe, yeah.
Yeah, with the boxes.
Yes, yes.
To your point, that what was still a lot, in other words, we were going to try to figure them out and nail it all down, and they were still, that was still alive and well in them, which had to do with not just paying attention, but paying attention, it births curiosity. And gratitude and contentment.
Yeah, and you know, and it's in the inverse as well. Curiosity brings about paying attention. You know, you already said that you know, which is first or
right.
Which is second?
Absolutely. So anyway, I love that story. And it's just, you know, it's the same as what we. That's a paradigm shift.
What are some active steps that we can take that those of us like me that could never wrap my arms, I can wrap my arms around paying attention, but I could never really wrap my arms around presence and mindfulness. They just seemed like, you know, some new age hooey to me.
Yeah, well, what did you see today that made you smile?
I saw my son almost hit a home run.
There you go. What did you see today that made your heart glad?
What did I see today that made my heart glad?
See here.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw anything that made my heart glad today. It's been kind of a struggling day. So.
No, you no. The answer is having Hershey on the show made my heart glad. See.
That really is true. That really is true.
What's interesting is, I wasn't setting you up for that. But the point is, because it's so quote, that's just, well, of course we say, well, no, it's not of course. It's not of course. There's a time when we won't have the memory of that. We won't be able to verbalize that. We won't be able to say it. And so a lot of it is just, and to the point, your point is the permission and freedom to say it. In other words, we don't say those things to each other. In fact, what we say to each other, what'd you do today? What'd you accomplish today? What'd you get done today? We don't say what made you glad.
Yeah,
what made
your
you
damn
smile,
checklist.
What made, you fully alive, what made you thankful? What made you grateful? I mean, some people do that stuff, which is great. My friend Lee, he was Episcopal priest, and he's not with us anymore, but he talked about prayer, and his prayer was like a centering prayer thing, but he'd do it, he'd like walk and do this little mantra thing. So he was out in his garden, and the lilies were blooming, and so he said, oh my God, he said, the lilies were so fantastic. He said, so I immediately forgot what I was praying and why I was praying. I wasn't praying, and I was just messing with the lilies for like a half hour. And then he said, I instantly felt bad, like, uh-oh, I didn't do my prayer. And he said, you know, after a while he realized, no, actually, being with the lilies was his prayer.
That was his prayer, this very Benedictine. Yeah, which I...
It's very, and it's all what we're doing is we're hitting the reset button on the way we frame things. That's what we're doing, hitting the reset button.
Instead of automatically, actually, actually pay attention to our day, to our morning, to our time with our family, and then even to the drive and to our coworkers.
You haven't gotten to tell someone about it yet, but the first person we have to tell about it is ourselves. Did you see that? Did you notice that? I mean, think about it just for a minute. In the sports world, what's the first thing you say when you've been watching a game and you see a play? What's the first thing you say to the people watching with you? What's the first thing you say after a great play?
Oh, with a great athlete, I say that's pretty.
Did you see that?
Yeah. Yeah, you do say, did you see that? Yeah, you do.
Did you see that? I mean, Thomas Merton, there's a great story about Thomas Merton. Do you remember, did you ever go camping? Do you remember, you know, the Coleman lantern?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
So Coleman lantern, their advertisement on the box, you take the lantern out. The box says that the lantern was designed to stretch days, and their little sentence was, the lantern was designed to stretch days to give more hours of fun. And Merton has this whole essay. He's going, wow, I didn't know I needed a lantern to have fun. why can't the lantern just give light? I mean, why does the lantern have to now be the arbiter of fun? It's the same with the success thing. It's not enough. See, there we go. It's not enough just to be a lantern. And it's not enough just to have a day with light. Now you have to stretch the day. And then there's everything about it.
You know, it's not enough, Terry. It's not enough to have a day without light. If you're out camping and it's dark, you have you light your fire, and 8 o'clock you go to sleep.
Right.
You know, you don't need the Coleman lantern.
I agree with you. That's true.
Yeah, let's. I want to move on to astonishment, but before I do that, I want to take a break, and so we will take a 20-second break. We'll be back, and we'll talk about being astonished, which is huge. Hi, you're listening to Charlie Hedges in the Next Chapter with Charlie, and I am here with my very special friend and guest, Terry Hershey, and we are talking about Mary Oliver's instructions for living a life, which are paying attention, being astonished, and telling somebody. Now, we've talked quite a bit about paying attention, and we could probably talk the whole podcast on that, but I want to move to the second point, which Terry did remind us that these are not necessarily in order of priority, that you have to pay attention first and be astonished and then tell somebody about it. You could be astonished and then find out that you're paying attention because you're astonished. But let's move on to this astonished. Now, as I said, this is one I can get into. I feel like now here, this is maybe controversial, so maybe we can get into this, Terry. I feel that I must be in awe of some kind of regularity, and I'm going to put like at least weekly. But then there are those, and I imagine you are one, that would rather remind me I should be astonished daily. To me, astonishment is something very, very special. How could I possibly do that daily and still maintain the integrity of the word astonishment?
Well, I wouldn't get all hung up in that. I mean, because that makes, then you're making, see, then we're weighing and measuring the word. It's like a test or a contest. Were you astonished enough?
Yes.
Oh, I
wasn't
astonished enough. I mean, who gives a crap? I mean, use the word awe. In other words, you know the Celts. You know Celtic Christianity, Celtic
right.
spirituality. They talked about thin places, right? And the thin places are the places in our day where we see the divine.
Right.
In other words, we see the
right.
sacred.
Right.
It breaks through. And that's awe. That's where, in other words, just stops you for a minute. It's like, yeah. And that's what you say is, yeah. My son, I tell the story, I told it when you were at that event about my son when he was just a kid, young, and we're at a place in Vashon called Bob's Bakery, and it's in the main drag of town, a little tiny town, and we're eating a cinnamon bun. We're sitting out on a bench. It's carved by an old tree, which is amazing in and of itself, and this massive cinnamon bun, and, you know, it oozes out and drools down, and so we're watching. There's no traffic. You're just sitting there watching, and you say hi to people coming in and out. And we're sitting there, and I'm only there because it was my assignment to be the parent who took Zach out that day, right? So I'm focused. I'm just like, okay, getting this done. And Zach is just,
you're focused on getting this task done.
Correct. No, yes. Checking it off.
Yeah.
And Zach is just absolutely, he's loving the, I mean, it's down his face and everything, this cinnamon bun, plus he's looking around, and then he just says, Dad, this is the life.
How old did he say that?
He must have been 7.
Oh, my goodness.
This is the life. And so that's just another phrase to use instead of astonishment. This is the life.
And how many times have...
Because we all...
Every now and then we do have that occurrence where we're sitting with somebody and saying, can it get any better than this? You know,
that,
and it's...
Well, yeah,
and it's,
use
and
that
it's,
one too.
And it's not...
Doesn't
game, and it's
doesn't,
not
doesn't
at...
game better than this.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. Yeah, doesn't game better than this. Yeah.
You yeah. Can. And it's never at some extraordinary event.
That's the point. That's the key. Although, you know, occasionally that does, absolutely, when you're lucky to have that. No doubt about it. But.
Like Zach Brown in concert.
Correct. Yeah, right. Yeah, when you're lucky enough to go to something like that, a one-of-a-kind thing, absolutely. But then you realize little moments in the day are one-of-a-kind. I mean, the things that popped up, I just came home yesterday from several days away on the East Coast, so when I come here, there are things in my garden that were not here 5 days ago.
Now, you see, that's what I want to talk to you about, because you have a garden. You live on an island, and I know you had one house that had a view of the ocean and another island, and it's just surrounded by this garden. So you live in this place of abnormal beauty, I would say, at least for those of us who are suburb city people. And it occurs to me that it's easier for you to be astonished on a daily basis. I have to try harder in Orange County, that I'm filled with cement and rows of tiny boxes called houses and strip malls and facades, nothing's real. And you don't have what you have in the Pacific Northwest.
So then, my statement to anybody in that sort of setting is then you need to find them. And they might be in places that you weren't ready for them. You don't see them. I mean, sure, you can. I mean, when I lived in Orange County, I spent one day a week down at Laguna early in the morning, spent the whole morning down there in a chair near the beach. That's what I did. But there are other ways to see that kind of beauty. There are other ways to find that, even if it's small ways, on your back deck or whatever you do with things like that.
That brings to mind.
But the thing to your point, Charlie, is it requires intention. It will not just happen for you. That's the thing about being present.
That's a really critical word. Is paying attention. And then being astonished require intention. They require that I'm trying to do that. It's rare that it happens accidentally. It has to almost be something truly out of the ordinary for me to get astonished at it, rather than the normal things I could be astonished at. You know, like I was about to tell you that I write my blogs typically at the Montage, which is it's kind of high level, but it's very understated. It's not ostentatious. And I sit in a chair. I have this wonderful breakfast, and then I sit in a chair with my Badoit sparkling water that has a view of the ocean and of a 5-foot fireplace, and I truly can say I'm astonished every time I'm there. I'm in awe just being there, and that my writing, whether I know what I'm going to write about or not, I know something's going to come to mind. And just because I'm in this sort of magical spot where my muse has the freedom to interact with me.
Right, 100%.
But what I have to do is I, unlike you, and like most people living in the city, we have to go somewhere, or here's where I want your help. Rather than finding beauty in nature or in, even at the Montage, it's not quite nature, but it's the ocean and it's a fireplace, and what are other means from which I can be astonished? Give us some ideas of
I'm
what
astonished,
is astonished.
And change astonished. I mean, change it to awe. But I'm a cook. I cook every night. I'm in awe when I cook, because I'm in awe with the just the exercise of cooking and the taste and the smell and the fragrance and all of that, putting it together. And there's music in the background. I have special music on, whatever it is for that night. And I'm in awe when that happens. And I hear the music and I'm doing the cooking. I'm in awe. I read every day. Well, that's not true with every book. Some books I'm not in awe of.
Yeah, unfortunately I've found too many of those lately.
But to that point, there are little ways to do that. My son was in awe of a cinnamon roll.
And on a side street, sitting
on
there.
On a cinnamon roll.
So it doesn't require the Eiffel Tower to be astonished.
No, and that's a good point. It doesn't require the Eiffel Tower.
And that's what I think. That's what I think. Vacations so much are made of that is unfortunate for at least Americans. I can't speak for Europeans.
You know what? But listen to what that does. Listen to what that is. That's that. It's not enough again. See, because our vacation will give you the enough. See, and there we go again. So we make people feel bad. In other words, it's not enough. And yet the kids were loving that. The boxes were enough. They found awe and astonishment. You know, and this is the great thing about that, Charlie. If you had them on, you'd say, did you find awe? They wouldn't. They wouldn't know to answer yes or no about that. All you could tell is they were fully alive.
Yeah. And that's a great way to put it, that they were fully alive. That awe does bring, you know, my website is titled, gosh, it's been so long since I even read it. It is titled About Awe, About Meaning, Adventure, and Awe. And that I find awe, you know, another place I find awe for those of us who live in the city, but in older cities, is the architecture and bridges. I will stop and look at a bridge and just be
there you go.
In total Boom. Amazement of the bridge.
Absolutely. And that's and anybody who knows architecture would do that.
Yeah, and
100%.
Even those who don't know architecture but love art, you know, there's something to the engineering that went into building into this bridge that just amazes me that, you know, cars can go over it and it is so fantastically beautiful.
Right. Absolutely. And I wholeheartedly agree with that. I mean, so then the other thing, I mean, you're going to the telling about it is just starting with Meister Eckhart's prayer, which is two words, thank you. I mean, start of the telling is you tell by saying thank you.
You know, that's what I was going to read, and I'm not sure if it really fits here. Let's see if it does, but Richard Rohr has a new book, and you know I'm a fan of Richard Rohr, and he has a new book that's probably going to cause a bit of controversy. It's titled The Universal Christ, and he makes this statement that I think applies to us, and it says, creation, be it planets, plants, or pandas, was not just a warm-up act for the human story. The natural world is its own good and sufficient story if we can only learn to see it with humility and love. That requires contemplative practices, stopping our busy and superficial minds long enough to see the beauty, allow the truth, and protect the goodness of what is. I like that. If we stop with humility and love, and that it does require intentionality.
Yes, 100%.
And it is found, if I'm catching what you're saying and what the way I'm thinking right now, it is found in the natural, in the ordinary. Who would say that, except for those who love cooking, you know, the handful, who would say that your act of cooking is a moment of awe and astonishment for you?
You mean?
I mean, how many people would even think of that when
that's why we're going back to the paradigm shift again. Is that who would think of that? That's like the people in the room with the kids. Who is going to think, which boxes are they going to play with? No one even thought of that.
Yeah.
It never occurred to them.
Yeah, and, you're really making me think of that this thing is much more wrapped around the common and the ordinary than it is the extraordinary.
In fact, I would say 99.9%.
You know, I had a guest on last week, a hypnotherapist, and I don't know where he got the data, but he made the statement that 96% of our thoughts today were the same thoughts that we had yesterday. We only have 4% new thoughts. You know, we're still reminiscing and pondering over the same issues that we were yesterday.
A similar adage to, as you know, couples who've been together a long time, their fights, 90% of their fights are one subject.
Yeah. Yeah.
We repeat the same fight. We just fight it different ways.
Yeah.
It's so fun to come on a show and let's talk about pay attention, be astonished, and then let's talk about fighting as a couple.
So let's do this because we're running short on time. But I do want to talk because I really don't quite understand it. As if I'm showing that I'm still learning about this whole thing, and I like your words of intention, and I like your words of everydayness. That I'm not looking for something special. But let's talk about this last thing: is tell about it, talk about it. What's that all about, Terry?
In other words, don't keep it to yourself.
So who am I going to tell?
Well, you can tell somebody that you're standing next to. You can tell somebody that you know. You can tell it in the Meister Eckhart way, and you can say thank you to a deity if you pray, or to the sky. The tell about it is simply... is that woman on the boat saying, look, that's the tell about it. All she's saying is look.
Right.
You know, look at that. Did you see? And me, you know, my thing with this, did you see that?
Yeah.
That's tell about it.
You know, and also for those of us that are fortunate that enjoy writing, there's nothing better than telling about it in writing, even though you don't talk about it to somebody. But you are intentionally pondering the experience that you had that day. And that's why I know a lot of people talk about doing their journaling. I would do mine in the morning, and they would do theirs at night, although I'm tired, but they would do theirs at night in reflection of the day.
Yeah, writing is literally telling about it. That's why I love memoir. And I mean, anyway, good fiction is that way, too. You're telling about it. You're telling about it. That's what you're doing.
And
because stories, I mean, Barry Lopez says stories have a way of saving us. That's why we tell stories to each other.
Tell me about that. I've read that, and it's something that sounds good, but I don't understand what it means. That storytelling.
Well, tell me, what was the first the TV miniseries? What was the very first one?
The very first one that I remember is I Love Lucy.
The miniseries where they just made 6 or 7 little episodes.
How about Roots?
Roots was the very first one. What was the theme of Roots? What did he say everyone?
Akuma Kembe.
Yeah, Kunta Kinte. And that's his name, and he said, I need to tell you a story. In other words, and we have this stories. I mean, how much of our civilization was before printing, before reading, before the capacity to do all that?
Oh, yeah.
How did we hold all that sacred? We told stories. That's what we do. We tell stories because stories hold us. They keep it sacred.
Yeah. Tell me a bit, as we conclude, what does storytelling do for both parties, for the listener and for the storyteller? How does it impact? Because it impacts each a bit differently.
Well, I don't know if it impacts each of them differently, but storytelling, it's about making space. Yeah, storytelling is making space. And you're making space to learn and to grow and to open your eyes and to receive. Storytelling is literally the pay attention, be astonished thing. That's what a story does.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it sounds to me like a lot of this is something that we need to form habits around. That, you know, that's your intentionality aspect, that it needs to become a habit that we live, that we do daily or we do regularly, rather than just waiting for the moment to occur.
It's like an emotional aerobic activity, aerobic sport. It's something that it's muscle memory. And it's muscle memory about a different kind of success.
And Terry, it's so hard for all of us because we live in a world of stimuli. We live Absolutely. In a world that is intentionally designed to keep us from focusing on anything right. other than what we can purchase here, there, and everywhere, and how we can better our life.
Absolutely.
So we live in a world that fights against this type of thing, especially 100%. those of us who live in a city or an urban area that is just
100%.
So we are degrading as a human race, degrading in the sense that we're missing life, we're missing the opportunity and the joy and the contentedness of life.
I just think this as an opportunity to just say, okay, then I'm going to pay attention rather than to give myself grief for it. But yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I don't want to give myself grief, but I do have to. I do have to make it intentional, and that's something that I think I'm going to try to do. I love that intentional is a. I think that's our word that for paying attention, being astonished, and telling someone. Is an intentional aspect of our life, not something that just happens naturally because we live in a culture that wants us not to do that naturally. Did I lose you? Hirsch? Terry?
I walked out to the pond. I have two ducks that live on my pond.
So you just walked out to the pond during the freaking podcast?
Yeah, because I looked out the window and I paid attention, and I have another drake who's in here fighting with the drake that's in here, and I'm thinking, this is better than the podcast.
Okay, I'll leave you with your drakes. Terry, thanks so much for spending time with me today and telling me about your drakes. And I'm Terry, did we lose you? Did we lose you? Oh, yeah, I was out looking at drakes fighting. Yeah, I was being I was busy being astonished. I was doing the podcast.
I'm telling you, it doesn't take much. You know, this is the life, Charlie. This is
great. It really is. Well, you know, almost like it or not, this is the life. So you might as well figure out how to like it, because it ain't going to change.
Absolutely, like it or not, this is the life.
Yeah. Okay, buddy. Thanks for coming on today.
Always good.
Yeah, and I want to tell everybody to check out TerryHershey.com and subscribe or at least read Sabbath Moment, which comes out every Monday, and it's very worthy, and you get it again at TerryHershey.com. And I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and to be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next... This is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.